I ran into a St. Louis Rams football linebacker, Jacob Bell, tonight. He's from Cleveland, but he's been playing with the Rams a couple of years. And he walks past my table having dinner, and he stops. The guy's 6'4", by the way, weighs 300 pounds. And he stops, and he looks at me, and I look back at him like a little midget. And I said, yes. And he goes, I know you. I know you. And I said, no, I don't think we've met. And he said, no, you're that astronaut alien guy that I see on the History Channel. Well, of course, the History Channel's been running Ancient Aliens. But that's where he sat. We're getting a lot of exposure on that show, indeed. Open lines for you for the next couple hours. I've got to tell you about this story. I've seen a lot of strange ones. That's why we're opening up another luck line tonight. The man dubbed the world's luckiest man after cheating death 7 times and winning the lottery is now the happiest after giving away all his cash. Music teacher Franco Selak survived plane and train crashes and other disasters before winning $1 million 5 years ago in Croatia. But now the 81-year-old man said he's never been happier after selling his luxury home on a private island, giving his fortune to family and friends, and moving back to a very modest home in his hometown there in Croatia. He kept the last bit of cash back for a hip replacement operation so he can keep up with his 60-year-old wife, Katarina, and to build a shrine to the Virgin Mary to give thanks for his luck. In his first escape in 1962, when he was on a train from Sarajevo, which derailed and plunged into an icy river, 17 people died. He made it to the riverbank. A year later, he was thrown out of a plane on his first and only flight when a door flew open. This time, 19 people died. He landed in a haystack. In the following years, he survived a bus that he was on skidding into a river, his car catching on fire on a motorway, and his other car catching on fire on the freeway as well. And he claims that he is, and I think he is, one of the luckiest men alive. So here's the luck line. Share with us perhaps your luck story. That's 818-817-0021. 818-817-0021. In addition to open lines, the luck line on Coast to Coast AM. And the Skype line is open for you, too, at George97313. Okay, ready for open lines? Let's go for it. We'll pick it up by going to Grace in Los Angeles on the wildcard line. Hi, Gracie.
Hey, George. It's a pleasure.
Thanks.
I have a question for you about crop circles, actually.
Okay.
I was watching you on Ancient Aliens, and I was wondering if you possibly think crop circles could be some type of territorial message for one alien race to see to another, kind of like we've been here before. We know what type of elements there are here. Go ahead and, you know, kind of explore another part.
It could be code. It could be that. It could be one of my theories, the planet, the Gaia theory is that planet Earth is alive. It's an organism.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
It's the planet's way of trying to communicate with us as well. A lot of different possibilities. And, you know, even if, Grace, every crop formation except one was man-made, you've got that one that we just can't explain.
Yeah.
But it truly is fascinating. I've never seen one up front and personal, but I really like to.
Oh, well, I mean, thanks for taking my call. Me and my boyfriend, we're huge fans of yours, and my boyfriend listens to you about every night, so he's trying to get his call in right now. So super. I'd just like to say thanks. It's a pleasure to speak to you. And,
okay, Grace.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. It's out so there well. In Los Angeles. Sounds like the weather's great out there, too, doesn't it? Let's go to Rita in Bend, Oregon. Welcome to the show, West of the Rockies. Hi Rita.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm calling about the oil spill in the Gulf.
Oh, yes.
And first of all, I tend to agree with you that the Earth somehow makes that oil, because look how much it's hemorrhaging, and how did dinosaurs get 18,000 feet down there?
I know it.
Well, then I started thinking about there's been some weird sinkhole things happening lately.
Yes.
And it made me think about Gordon Michael Scallion's maps, and I
uh-huh.
owned them.
Good point.
So I got them out to just kind of look to see, okay, if all of this oil is gushing out, wouldn't that be causing a displacement? I mean, that volume, you know, it's causing like a pocket somewhere, wouldn't it? And so I started looking at the math, and 1 cubic foot is equal to 7.48 gallons. And just from, you know, the other thing that they're doing on the news is they're say, sometimes they say 5,000 gallons. Well, they mean 5,000 barrels. They're talking about barrels because the 5,000 barrels would be the 250,000 gallons
right.
that is hemorrhaging.
Exactly.
So, well, today I heard they had a guy on the news and he was saying, as he was examining the oil spill itself, he was saying that it looks like to him that it's closer to 70,000 barrels a day. So I started figuring the cubic feet, and on the low end, it would be 1 million cubic feet of displacement. But at his estimate, in the 25 days that's been hemorrhaging, it's close to 10 million cubic feet. So I tried to figure out something that you could liken that to, and I looked at the Empire State Building, and without the tower part of it, you know, the antenna,
right.
there's 37 million cubic feet in the Empire State Building, so it would be 25, if it's true that that much is hemorrhaging, there is a pocket already at 25% of the Empire State Building.
That's amazing.
And then you look at Gordon Michael Scallion's maps, and my prayers go out to Louisiana is gone in Gordon Michael Scallion's maps.
Yes, and so with Lori Toy, and I do believe Edgar Casey when he
yeah.
had his image.
Yeah, and I got, I mean, it hurt my brain because I'm old and I don't do math very well, but I mean, and my numbers are, you know, kind of rounded here and there, but it's close. And I mean, 25% of the Empire State Building would make a huge pocket enough that it's right off the point of Louisiana, and that would cause, you know, that initial thing. And if it's all kind of veined together and it's sucking from under Texas and under Arizona and into California, then maybe that's what causes California to crack off.
Who knows? Did you hear about that sinkhole in Montreal? A family down in the basement watching
yeah.
television, the sinkhole gobbled up their house, and they all died.
I know. That's what made me start thinking when I heard my mom told me about that just like 2 days ago. And then I started thinking about this, like how, you know, well, because I can remember when, because in Oregon, the geologist made fun of poor Mr. Scallion and said that, you know, how big the fault would have to be for that to happen. And then, like, 10 years after he said that, they found that fault. It runs the Cascades and then down the Columbia Gorge and into the Blue Mountains. That fault, the fault that would be there that would, you know, gobble up the earth is there. But what if this displacement of this oil is what starts, what triggers that?
Well, that's very possible. When you take something out of the planet, something else has to give. Let's go next to our luck line. Barry is in Las Vegas. Now, that's a place to be lucky, Barry. How are you?
I'm telling you, George, I have done everything except hit that lotto or that mega bucks here in Las Vegas, but I'm working on it. It's absolutely delightful to talk to you. I am a first-time caller. I think tonight's show with Brenda Schultz, probe that was a fabulous expose of stuff. And we have to understand that. I believe it was a probe. We have that kind of technology, that technology that so many people witnessed in England was just something that was a little far advanced. And, you know, we're in times when we got so many serious things to talk about. And I'm looking forward to George Knapp with you. Was it tomorrow night, I believe?
He's on Sunday.
Oh, he's on Sunday night.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate to be in the media here in Las Vegas. And I've had George.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, when he came back from the Soviet Union on his fact-finding tour here, he was there twice. And when he came back and I'd be able to, we got together and talked and he did my show. He said, you know, they were a little tight the second time. There were some serious things. And as Stephen Greer, Dr. Greer says with the Disclosure Project, the governments around the world that are in the know are so, they're not aggravated that. No, they're not amazed that there's other life forms living with us and coexisting. They're aggravated that we haven't shared in the technology, and that's what they're extremely upset about.
Go roll the dice, Barry, and win, huh?
I'm going to do that. And anybody playing Megabucks, you have to have 3 coins across, or else it's just a $10,000 jackpot. George, good luck. God bless you.
Right,
you're really sitting on the story of the story of the millennium. And you're a true patriot, and I applaud you, sir. You've been Dr. Greer.
Okay, my friend. Next up, let's go to Tommy in Noble, Oklahoma. Hey, Tom, first-time caller.
Hey, George.
Hi.
You did all right?
Yeah, all is well. How about you?
Hey, I just solved how they could fix that oil leak temporarily, and I'm calling this the Nori solution, okay?
All right.
Okay, like a giant plastic bag, and they go down to the seafloor, and they get it attached all the way around the hole, and then it extends up to the surface, so it contains that oil leak, and then they can, like, pump it out with boats and everything, and that minimizes the environmental damage, and then they can work on it from there.
And it would have to be strong enough not to break.
Right, but it wouldn't have to be that strong. They can make it.
They probably could make it. That's kind of novel.
Hey, it's there. Just remember, it was on Coast to Coast first.
We heard it right there. Thanks, Tommy. Next up, we've got Jack in Drury, New Hampshire. Hey, Jack, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Joe. It's actually Derry, New Hampshire.
Derry, okay.
Derry, yeah. Anyways, earlier tonight when you were speaking with James Peniston, the Air Force security policeman, you were kind of playing devil's advocate when you asked him if you thought that craft might have been a drone, and he didn't think there were drones. Well, we had drones back then. I'm retired from the Navy, and we actually had, on my ship, we had drone helicopters. So, not that this thing could have possibly been a drone, but...
But it could have.
Yeah, well, but, the helicopters, they were very loud, and this thing, obviously...
Yeah.
Didn't make a sound. The other thing, the other problem I only have with that, with the Bentwaters case is James Fox even mentioned that Colonel Hall, the deputy base commander,
yeah,
had alluded to the fact that they had some sensitive, the weapons storage area was a sensitive area, that, and Fox seems to think that means there were nuclear weapons. But I doubt that there were nuclear weapons there, because it... Woodbridge Bentwaters was home of the 81st Tactical Fighter Wing. That's the A-10 Warthog.
Right.
It doesn't. They don't carry nukes.
They don't carry nukes. No.
Yeah, but I didn't say that they weren't storing nukes there, probably for some other reason. But most of the time I've ever heard of UFOs hanging around Air Force bases, they were usually around SAC bases. Yeah, we have one close. We had one close by here in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Pease Air Force Base, and back in 1965, they were reported in around the weapons storage area as well as surrounding towns. But
one of the reasons I don't think it was a drone, Jack, and think of this, is he said the way it took off and disappeared. You know, drones you would have been able to see, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that was the key phrase there to me. Thanks, Jack. Next up, we go to Carol in Palm Bay, Florida. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Oh, wonderful show. Wonderful show. You keep us on our toes.
Yes, we do, don't we? Yes.
I have a situation where I have not heard anyone talk about it. A live baby that was born, Cyclop.
A Cyclop baby?
Cyclop baby. I need you to put this through there. I saw it with my eyes. I went through a lab to make my decision for nursing, and a friend of mine in histology said, let's go check out the cancers and the cadavers, you know, the whole bit, went through and forth if it's what I wanted to do, back in 1963. And in this container, along with all the others, there was this little man. It looked like a little man with 3 eyes, the middle eyes, bulging, and it was with hair on the arms, like a little giant, a Cyclop baby. It was unbelievable. Someone brought this into the world. I guess they were told the baby was dead, whatever. But, you know, I don't know if any of your viewers have ever heard of it.
Did it look deformed, Carol?
No, it had the body of a man. The body of, it had muscular body of a person, of a little man, with a round, full-grown jaw, jawline, lips, and was hairy.
Yet you say it looked like a baby.
Well, the reason why I said it was a baby was because if the person went through 9 months and they brought it, you know, they gave birth to it at that time.
Right, right.
But it has never left me. Well, of course, I didn't go into nursing when I saw this because I couldn't believe it was kind of a weird situation. I mean, seeing the cancer, the liver, you know, the whole various things.
But oh, my God, yeah.
And this is in a valid hospital. I don't want to mention the name of the hospital, but it's in New York. And, I mean, it's there. It's in the formaldehyde, and it stands there. It's truly amazing. Maybe
I want to check into this. Is this well known out that way, Carol?
Well, I mean, I can tell you where it is off the air. You know,
all right. I'll put you on hold.
This is something that, I mean, I would like someone to check. I've never heard of it.
Okay. Let me put you on hold, Carol and Tom. Get the information. Put it on my desk in L.A. I'll be there on Monday, and we'll check that out. Jim is in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening about the UFO sighting in England. I just have a couple questions. I mean, if these guys were security guards or security people on an Air Force base, they seemed a little casual and cavalier about going out and investigating something that landed near their base that could be putting the base in jeopardy.
It was close to Christmas. I think they thought it was a joke until they got out there.
They didn't have any camera. They didn't have a way of taking any
video. They took pictures. They took pictures. They turned them in, and they said they never got them back, and that the ones they did see later were all whited out.
Okay. And did these guys have weapons?
I never asked them if they had weapons when they went out there. I assume if they were security on a military base, they probably did.
Well, I think I would have pulled my weapon, and when the craft started to take off...
You would have shot it?
I think I would have shot it.
And that's an interesting question. If you would shoot that craft as it took off. Man, I'm not sure I would have. It could have fired back at us and blew us all up.
But that would have been more evidence.
If the witnesses would have been blown up. I'm not sure the government wanted anybody to know about it.
I just wish. I mean, I'm an amateur astronomer. I definitely believe that there's life in other forms all over the universe. I just really... seems to always happen that the film is destroyed or we don't have, you know, or it's a shaky person with a camera. I mean, I really want something that...
I know. We both do. I mean, we want great pictures, superb video. Keep in mind, though, you know, this is done by people under duress. They're nervous. They're scared. And if it's on a base, government's surely not going to let us know what's going on at all. And I believe these guys. That I believe what they saw. I really do. Now, was this man-made or not? Who knows? But the fact that it took off in the blink of an eye tells me that it wasn't from this planet. I don't think we have anything that goes that fast, and definitely not in 1980. We may have reversed it now, but we don't have it then. I'll be back in a moment. Open lines continue right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, and the luck line is 818-817-0021. Here's a little bit of what's in store next week on Coast to Coast for you, by the way. James von Prague joins us on Monday as we talk about his advice about living and those who have passed away. Incredible program on Tuesday. Jeffrey Smith, Genetic Roulette. We're going to talk about the risks of genetically modified foods. Claude Swanson on our Wednesday program, The New Science of the Paranormal. John Van Auken joins us as we talk about Edgar Cayce on Thursday, and then we talk a little bit about 2012 on Friday and open lines. And we'll be back with more open lines in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's go to St. Catharines, Canada on the luck line. John is with us. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Recently, I'd say about 3 months ago, I was hit by a car. I'm kind of lucky to be alive right now.
Oh, I would say so. My gosh.
Yeah, I was riding my bicycle going to the store, and I was sideswiped by a vehicle. the way when it hit me, it collapsed my lung and it ruptured my spleen. And I had a bunch of internal bleeding. If it wasn't for emergency surgery, I wouldn't be around right now.
Would you consider yourself lucky, or good medical service just did it?
Well, I'm going to have to say maybe good medical service did that. I don't know whether or not there is something watching over me, because if I was over like a few inches, I wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Thank you very much.
All right, John, I'm glad you're here. Glad you're listening to the program. Now, true luck would have been if you weren't in that spot and that car missed you. That would have been great luck. Let's go to Larry in Little Rock, Arkansas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Larry, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I'm glad that you took my call. Thank you.
Sure.
I was just calling in to share a UFO experience. And it was an experience relating to the orbs. I had an orb in my bedroom, and it basically was a medicine ball type orb about that size, and it was sort of white with a little bit of red. And it illuminated an iguana into the curtain. And then the next day, my friend found an iguana. He called up, and he said, "I found an iguana on the side of the road." And I was, now, as strange as this sounds, most of my life I've been a skeptic, and I have no paranormal ability or anything like that. But, you know, it's the kind of thing that I mean, I guess, you know, you wonder whether you've got brain damage or something like that. But that actually happened to me, and I just thought I'd share that UFO experience. And I was so scared, by the way. It was a flight or fight experience, and I told it to get out. And amazingly, it went through the wall.
It did. Did it look solid for a while?
It did. It looked like it was real, tangible, but I was scared. I was so scared. And I just told it to get out. And what it left was the iguana, and it was the same size as the one that was found.
Weird.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna chalk that one up to one of the weird orbs I've ever heard stories. Thanks, though. Bellingham, Washington, let's go to Merrick on Coast to Coast, first-time caller. Hi, Merrick.
Hi, pleasure to have you on the show.
Sure thing, sir.
I also enjoyed you on Ancient Aliens.
I've been having fun doing that. I think they've got two more to go, and then they'll probably keep running them. Then they've got reruns.
I hope they got lots more to go.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have a UFO story to tell you.
Sure.
I was back home in Hawaii on the Big Island vacationing, and we're taking a couple of my buddies and I are taking a cruise down the beach area. This was at night. And we just saw this bright light in the water, like over the water. And next thing you know, not even a minute later, this thing's right next to us. And it's like probably the size of a football field, but it's completely square, like a cube, like a building in the sky. And it made like no noise at all. And yeah, the light on there was so bright that you could look directly at it. And I kid you not, we hit nitrous and everything, and this thing was keeping up with us.
It wasn't from our planet, was it?
No, definitely not. But from the time that we saw it to the time we actually met up with some buddies about 45 minutes away, it seemed like it was instant. Like we just ended up there.
You had missing time, no doubt.
It definitely seems that way.
Yeah. I've had that. I don't think I've been abducted, but I mean, have you ever driven and you go from point A to point B, maybe 5 miles, maybe 10, maybe even longer, and you can't remember in between? Nothing. Let's go to Mike in Los Angeles on the wild card line. Hey, Mike, welcome.
Hi. I usually call about, you know, the financial issues, but I heard a story the other day I thought you might be interested in.
Okay.
And that was at the front of your program, you had someone on talking about the first day of the event in the Gulf. It is an event. It's not a spill. It's not a slick. It's not a leak. It's an event. And he said that the first day was a complete blackout. There's no transcripts. And I heard from someone who is a specialist who investigates exactly these types of accidents. And I don't want to, you know, if you pass me back to your screener and give you contacts on that.
Okay.
He said that the best he could put together is that the big wigs were going to come on the big rigs, and there was a fight, a heated argument. They were being told to hurry up to make this ready for these people to come, and it was a really heated argument, and they were having to, you know, hurry up and work faster than the allotted time to. It was right after they were doing this new Halliburton slur cement they were putting in. It was experimental of some sort, and that these blowout valves, as they call them, have over a 50% failure rate to begin with. And he just went on and on about it, that also that, you know, what we're being told is the magnitude that has already been released and the rate it's being released now is we're not being told the truth about that, but that there are a lot of, you know, and he went through the sequence of events and how it happened. And, you know, so I don't want to, you know, say anything beyond what I can, you know, just from what I heard. But I, if you want, I can give you a contact on that.
Oh, sure. Will he talk? Will he talk to us? Do you
think? I don't see any reason why not. But this is, you know, we are just being completely, this is, they're doing everything humanly possible to cover this up as much as they can for as long as they can. But this is really bad.
Oh, absolutely, Mike. All right, let's do that. Give us the contact. This is a story that won't go away, nor is it a story we will let go away. And even if they ever get this thing sealed up, we're still going to talk about it. Let's go next to our luck line. Carolyn in Flint, Michigan. Is there still a Flint, Michigan, Carolyn?
Yes.
Good. Good.
Yes,
you know,
there is.
I've heard with the economy hitting it, it has been really disastrous.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty bad around here. There's not a lot of jobs and stuff, so it's rough. It's rough. But anyway, yeah, my well, I consider it good luck. I'm still around. But when I was 16, I had my first major surgery for endometriosis, you know, which, you know,
it's
you know,
female
I couldn't have
thing.
Any kids after that. Right,
yeah.
Right. And then from there, at 36, I ended up with breast cancer. Oh. I had to go through chemotherapy, lost my hair, all the good stuff, had every major reaction that you can possibly have with that. I was off work for 9 months. Then after that, that happened in 99, and then in 2002, I had to have open heart surgery to have a valve replacement because the chemotherapy messed up one of my heart valves.
You're the bionic woman.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's been rough, but hey, I look at it this way. You know, I'm still here. People say, God, you have terrible luck. No, actually I'm pretty lucky. I'm alive.
I bet every day you wake up, you enjoy your day.
Yeah, pretty much. I consider myself pretty lucky. I still work. I still have a job. You know, and I got hurt on the job in 90. So I'm on, you know, like restricted duty, but I listen every night, when I work. I'm a third shifter, so I never miss a show. I love you guys. You're just awesome. You make my night.
Thank you, Carol. You take care of yourself. Have a good weekend.
Okay. You too, hon. All right. Bye-bye.
We go next to Columbus, Ohio on open lines, and Chris is there. Hi, Chris.
Yes. I'm one of the old hippies from the 1960s.
A beatnik, they would call you, right?
Oh, I went to Woodstock.
All right.
A lot to do with that back in the day. But I've listened a long time to Coast to Coast, about 10 years. And, you know, conferences are nice, that you did Washington, D.C., and that's a good thing. But one thing I know, I don't know when the anniversary for Roswell's coming up, but
it's in
if
July.
We could do all
63.
The people we've had on the show, from Willie Nelson to Merle Haggard, people that Art used to deal with, music people, to get them together, astronauts, you know, people like that. If we could get them together to do a music venue, kind of like Woodstock, like Washington, D.C. or Roswell. And, you know, the theme would be the truth is out there, you know, kind of like David Duchovny, you know, let's get at the truth, you know. And do, you know, if you get a few musicians to go to start.
We're into it. Yeah, I bet we could get Billy Gibbons and ZZ Top. You know, Billy listens
all the
time. Yeah,
6 million listeners if we could only get 1% of that, you know. And that's what woke up the government back in the day was Woodstock. And all we're getting, that's the truth. I mean, that's all walks of people, all kinds of people. You can even get the sci-fi people in on this, you know, as guests and stuff, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of
interesting. It could be done. But, you know, if we could, if one big mass group of people said, we want the truth, and they're having fun doing music too, then it might wake up the government and say, okay, maybe we've got to come clean. And that's the fun of it, is getting the government to come clean with what they know. And that's the only thing I can think of. Maybe Dennis Kucinich, Shirley MacLaine, somebody like that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter saw a UFO, never did completely clean
that's
with
right.
that. You know, all kinds of people. Chuck Yeager, you know.
Get some
maybe get Ted Turner to donate some land and some money to it. The guy from Virgin Atlantic. You know, these people, somebody does the contacting, it could
they
come
could.
Together.
Is Yeager still with us?
I don't know. Yeah, he's still alive as far as I know.
Is he? All right, I got to check that out. Okay, good.
It's an idea. I threw it out there. I hope maybe somebody would pick up on it and follow the, you know, like they say, one drop in the pond of water and the wave starts, you know.
Follow the trail. Okay, you got it. Next up, let's go to Jeff in Ventura, California. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Sure
when
thing.
I was real young, like almost 4 years old, I lost a sight in one of my eyes. Just a stupid accident. And ever since then, it's really weird. I have this amazing ability to predict, to pick colors, to almost an ability to sense. And I don't know if it's because my vision center shut down that my brain developed in another area. I also have an amazing ability without a clock to pick the time of day almost to the second. And I don't know why. It's really weird. People will say, well, what time will you be home? And I'll say, I'll be home at X amount of time. And sure enough, I'm home at that amount of time.
That amount of time. You got a clock in your head there, Jeff.
And it's also like, you know, I know something's going to happen. I have an ability to predict the future, and I don't know if it's because, you know, it was just one eye, so, you know, I have good vision in the other eye, but it's just this weird sense that I have that I can't explain.
I wonder if something happened to a part of your brain when something happened to your eye that made it more sensitive to
exactly.
the point where it's really tuned in.
That's what I'm guessing, because, you know, it basically has nothing to do. I mean, because it happened at such a young age, I've been told that if, you know, there was technology and you could get an eye transplant, that my brain has basically shut down the vision center for that eye. And I would think that the brain, you know, found something else to do.
Would you get an artificial eye if you could see out of it?
Yeah.
If they came up with that kind of technology.
Without a doubt.
And I think they probably will one day.
I do too. I don't know if I'm 55. I don't know if I'll be around them when that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just kind of weird. And, you know, like my kids will go, well, ask Dad. He can predict the future. And, you know, it's just weird. And
Do you see anything on the horizon for this country?
No, I think I'm going to go to bed pretty soon.
Well, that's a good prediction. All right, Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
That's 100% right there. By the way, test pilot Chuck Yeager is still alive, 87 years old. Just had a birthday, as a matter of fact, in Feb. 87 years old. Keep going, Chuck. It's my dad's age, too. Daryl, Indianapolis, Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hello, Daryl. Go ahead.
Hey. Hi. I had a dream when I was a child, early, mid-60s. I saw a big gray sphere in the sky, and it had the block lettering on it, and it said TIROS, and it had like red and blue lights flashing, and that was one of those dreams where I woke up, it seemed really real. I looked around, I wanted to say something, you know, and it was shocking, and I never did forget it. So years later, I looked on the internet, you know, I still could see that little dream, and I see that those letters stand for Television Infrared Remote Operating System, and that is in the early 60s, the first weather satellites that they put up to get pictures back down to Earth of them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I pictured it as a big sphere, you know, but when you see it on the internet, the actual satellites that they put up, they're more like cylinders. you know, big.
Well, that's pretty. That's pretty close, though.
I don't know. I kind of related it to those, like you see World War II mines in the water, you know, for the ships.
Yes.
It looked something like, you know, that with these things sticking out. And I don't know why it had to happen that way. I don't even know if it has any significance, but it's kind of weird that, you know, a kid would dream that and it would seem so real to you.
Any other dreams like that, Daryl?
Not particularly, no. Just but I was always intrigued by it. And then I you know, just kind of come to a conclusion when the internet was available and I had the big idea to look it up for no reason at all other than I couldn't forget it.
And you will always remember it, for sure. Let's go to Barbara in Connecticut on the Wild Card line. Hey, Barbara, good morning.
Good morning, George. I love your show tonight.
Thank you. I was wondering,
do you remember the artwork that they had started out by the Hollywood sign in California where they had that huge parachute sheet that went out for miles? This guy was doing art, supposedly. It was just a sheet that was extended.
That was a few years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering if something like that with a parachute material could be used along the coastline to prevent the oil from going into some of the marshes, maybe 100 yards or so out from the coast from a marshy area, and you put up some barriers. I mean, not for miles and miles, but even if you do it for a couple of the real delicate areas and prevent the oil from getting into the marsh itself.
Yeah, no, I don't know if they could do something like that to stop this mess, Barbara. It is it a mess of biblical proportions, isn't it?
Right. And then another thing in our newspaper today, we had an article of the hair salons in the animal hair trimming areas. We're collecting the hair because it's used in the to absorb the oil. It's in those bumpers that they put out.
Really? Oh, that's kind of interesting.
And they have a website to contact. It's Recycling Matter of Trust, and they recycle the hair from the beauty salons and the animal places.
And they just sprinkle it around. That's strange. I never heard of that. Okay, more open lines to come on Coast to Coast AM.